The music of my guest today on the program is so beautiful and so compelling. When you hear it, it's going to give you the chills. But to be more accurate, it's going to give you the shivers. I'm Alex Green, and this is Stereo Embers, the podcast. Check this out.
I held my breath for you until you said you were through. We spoke of death as if he was somebody that we knew. I flung my words round the kitchen, but nothing stuck like glue. Everybody thinks I'm doing well. Can't tell, I'm barely respiring.
Of my guest today on the program, Mackenzie Shivers. Let me tell you a little bit about Mackenzie Shivers. The Florida-born Mackenzie Shivers is a singer-songwriter of tremendous sensitivity and strength. Her new album, Primrose Was in Season, which by the way is her fourth overall, is a layered blend of moving compositions that summon joy and loss with dexterity and finesse. Produced by Kevin Salem, the album, which is the follow-up to 2021's Rejection Letter, brings to mind the stirring textures of Emmylou Harris's Wrecking Ball and Joe Henry's Trampoline. The song cycle on Primrose Was in Season braids together themes of healing, struggle, resilience, and resolve, and in the end, provides one of the more stirring listens of 2024. Now living in the Hudson Valley, Shivers has had quite a career. She's acted in off-Broadway productions, and she's toured Japan. She's done a lot in between all that, too. She'll tell us all about it. The point is, she's brave, she's bold, and she's unreasonably wonderful. And she's lovely to talk to. So here you go. Me and Mackenzie Shivers having a conversation right here on Stereo Embers, the podcast.
This was more true before our daughter was born. We would listen to vinyl a lot. And now we're kind of slowly getting back into that. But even just the like changing of the record sometimes is like, you know, there's so much more going on now. It's like we usually kind of just like have something through the Sonos, but we still like to make a point to put on a record every now and then. But yeah, I sing to our daughter a lot, and I'm, you know, when she was first born, I was, you know, playing piano, practicing writing with her kind of like in a carrier on me. And she would kind of be like snoozing and, you know, just kind of like making it work. But yeah, there is a lot of music in our house, which I love.
How does, and this is an interesting idea to me, the concept of you're a mother, has that shifted your songwriting in terms of your perspective? And I imagine that it would deepen it considerably by default. Like you have no choice. It's going deep. Did you notice a change, and were you surprised at how organic that change was.
You know, what's so interesting is I feel like maybe because of kind of the little tunes that I would sing to her as lullabies and things, I feel like I've been in a place now where I'm really drawn to melody and melodic lines. And I feel like, you know, I'm kind of like writing these songs kind of on the fly that are just melodies. And that's not usually how I write. Usually I write, you know, more from a harmonic place, or I'm doing kind of I'm usually writing at the piano. But I feel like now I'm kind of writing more just like by singing out loud, which I love. And I feel like that's kind of like a very pure, in some ways, kind of pure way of, I guess, writing sort of. But yeah, in terms of, I mean, I have not been as prolific of a writer since she's been born, which I think makes a lot of sense. And like, that's okay. You know, I feel like things go through cycles and phases and seasons, but the things I have written, I really like, and yeah, it's a little bit different definitely than stuff I've done before. And yeah, because this is a whole new experience for me. So like you said, it's bound to kind of deepen things. And yeah, I'm excited to kind of see like what else comes out.
How old is she now?
13 months.
The journey's beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
It also must be incredibly exciting to see where the songwriting will go as it mirrors her own progression in this world.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And I mean, the way I write too is I never know like what's going to hit or what's going to, you know, come to me or inspire me. And, you know, sometimes things will just come way out of the blue. And sometimes I'll go for months and months and not write a single note. And then all of a sudden I will write a bunch of songs in the span of, you know, 1 month. And I'm like, oh, this is what all these songs are about. They just kind of had to like, you know, percolate and then here they all come. So it'll be kind of interesting to see like what comes out as she grows and changes.
It's also good to hear that you're a real person, because sometimes we romanticize people who are musicians making music. We just think that's all they do. And it's like, you're a mom and you're busy and you can't always tend to the craft. But I feel like even when you're not tending to the craft directly, I think indirectly, you're probably always thinking about it. The unconscious brain is probably at work all the time. So even if you're not writing, you're probably still writing in some way.
Totally. I think that's true. I think that a lot of being a songwriter is like observing and taking things in and feeling and being in the moment. And all of those things to me are important as a writer. And even if I'm not actually writing notes on the piano, you know, all those things inform, like, as you say, the craft. And I think it's kind of like a way of moving through the world, I think, is just, being a real observer. And then those observations turn into stories, whether it's an observation of what's outside and around you or what's inside and what you're feeling. And so, yes, it's kind of like, as you say, it's always kind of going on in the background, so to speak, for sure.
I heard a musician years ago. I can't remember who it was, actually. It was so long ago. He was saying that when he was younger and he heard a baby in a restaurant crying, it would annoy him. And then when he had his first kid, he was a folk singer. He said he heard this percussion in the way that a baby cries. And he was like, oh, now I get why. I understand it on a whole different level. Do you understand what he means by that? And does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, totally. It does make sense to me. There have definitely been moments where I've heard her make different sounds and I thought have been so musical. And even times I've grabbed my phone being like, I want to record this because I want to remember what it sounds like. And totally. That makes sense to me. Yeah.
There's a vulnerability in having a child in the world, because the world is a scary place. Right. And so it's like, and your job is to protect and look out for and, and just you're in constant vigilant mode. But putting an album out also has its vulnerabilities. And so now you've got the album out there. It's been out for a couple of weeks, right? 2 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's this beautiful, fragile thing, which is also filled with incredible strength as well. But do you feel a similarity of like, oh, this is also something that needs to be, it's because it's such a vulnerable, beautiful album.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I just love it. And how does it feel to have it out there in the world? Is it a similar thing? Is it like a similar feeling as being a mother?
You know, in some ways, yes. I mean, I always have said that my albums are my babies, and you know, I give them everything I can. I love them. I tend to them. And then at a certain point, I let them go. You know, I have to learn how to let them go. If you know, that's to me what an album release is saying, okay, I've done everything I can for you. I've created you. I've loved you. I've nurtured you. And now please fly free. And with that still comes, you know, there's still nurturing that happens afterwards. But, you know, I definitely have found that along the way already with, I mean, my daughter, she's so young, but there's already been moments of like, okay, this is a moment where I'm going to kind of like let go a little bit. And, you know, I think that will just always be true for her whole life of kind of finding those moments. But yeah, I definitely think that they're correlated for sure. And oh yeah, definitely the vulnerability part for sure. But I also think that's, there's such a beauty and vulnerability. And to me, that's just such a great way to connect with other people. And so I think that's really important.
The song cycle is filled with beauty and grief and right and love and loss. And it's heartbreaking and wrenching. And it was also constructed in private. And so then to suddenly make it public, like playing these songs live or having it out there in the world, I imagine must be fairly intense.
Yes. I mean, when I wrote these songs, yeah, I was trying to have a baby. I was trying to have my daughter. And I was kind of struggling with that, then miscarried the first pregnancy. And that was, yeah, it was just absolutely just gut-wrenching. And I was shocked that all these songs came out of that. I just didn't expect that, because otherwise I felt like in a very, a kind of lonely, like turned in on myself place. But there were these moments where just all I could do was write. And I then went into the studio with them, because I was like, actually, I really, you know, I like these songs and I want to record them. And Kevin Salem, who produced them with me, he really helped me kind of find like the fun in these, some of these songs, and like a different kind of aspect of them in the production. He was like, he's like, this is kind of a wild idea. I don't know if you're going to like it, but why don't we put this like dance beat here and let me play this electric guitar and like, let's do this vibe if you like it. And I was like, no, I love it. I love it. Like, and it made me so happy and I was having so much fun making this. And then I think that, you know, it just kind of all felt a little bit meant to be, because by the time we were finishing recording, I think like the day before that, I found out I was pregnant with my daughter. And it kind of felt like this music kind of was just really there for me when I really needed it, and kind of built me this bridge to a much happier place. And so releasing it does feel intense. And I was kind of worried it would kind of bring me back to like a dark place. Mm. But it feels mostly, I mean, there's a little bit of that every now and then, you know, memories that come up, but mostly just actually feels very empowering to be able to tell this story in my own words in this music, and then, you know, have other people out there, you know, hopefully, ideally, and, you know, connect with it. And so it actually feels really good. Intense, but good.
Intense, but good. Yeah. Can you talk a bit about how you met Kevin? Because this might surprise you. But he was on my bedroom wall in 1987.
Oh, amazing.
He was in the band Dump Truck. And
yes.
Their For the Country album, I had the poster on my wall. And I still have it here somewhere. And so he was on my bedroom wall when I was in high school. And I've always, I've interacted with him a little bit on social media. And I'm a huge fan of his solo records as well. I just think he's a remarkable musician. And a very well-respected dude. And by all accounts, a lovely fellow.
Yes.
Can you talk about how you got to know him and what that process was like?
So Kevin and I met back in, I think it was 2018. I was doing an EP called Ravens, and Cody Ron, who played drums on it, he plays drums on all of my albums and live shows. He was producing that EP, and he said, I know this guy, Kevin Salem. I've worked with him on different projects. I think he would be great to mix it. And I was like, okay, great. And so Kevin mixed it. He did an awesome job. Then I had him engineer and mix my next album, The Unkindness. And then after that, he's a producer. He also does engineering and mixing, but like his he's really a producer at heart. And so for the next record, I thought, well, why don't like I want him to still engineer it and mix it, but I also want him to produce it. And so we did like because we got along really well. And so we did a holiday album together called Midwinter, which is like a very kind of like sparse, kind of handmade feeling EP. It's mostly piano and some percussion and we just had a great time doing that together. And so then we just kind of kept going. And so for my next record, Rejection Letter, I said, do you want to produce this with me? And kind of same thing. And then we just kind of like kept building our relationship, and then we really became friends. And he's like a big reason why I moved up here, because I was coming up here a lot to record Rejection Letter because he lives in Woodstock, and ended up really falling in love with it up here. And so then when we made Primrose Was in Season, I, had already moved up here, and he lives not even 5 minutes away from me now. And which was just kind of good luck. I mean, like what didn't even really plan it that way in terms of when we moved up here to live quite that close, but it just ended up working out that way. And so we recorded Primrose Was in Season over the course of a year. And it was just so fun. I mean, just kind of going over there and hanging out. We just had a lot of fun experimenting and being creative, and it just like we just really enjoyed our time together making it. And so hopefully we'll make a lot more stuff together because I really love working with him.
He's a brilliant guitar player.
Yeah, he is. I mean, no joke. He is. And
Yeah.
yeah, as you said, he's a very, I mean, he's just an amazing musician, wonderful person, and just a great collaborator. I mean, I can't even say I don't I it's just I could go on and on about how
Yeah.
great he is.
I could go on and on about how much I love his solo albums too. I remember he put one out called Soma City, and I just
Oh
listened to
yeah.
it nonstop.
Oh yeah, it's great. Great. Soma City Glimmer. Yeah, I mean, he's amazing. He really
Yeah.
is.
Lighthouse Keeper. Remember that song,
Yeah.
Lighthouse Keeper?
Oh
Ooh,
yeah. Oh yeah.
man. And what does it take to, this is a odd question to ask, but like, what does it take to trust somebody with your work? Is it one of those things like you instantly just know, like, this person, they get what I'm doing? I would imagine as quickly as that clicks, you could also meet someone who you're like, no, this is not the right person for me. How did you know that Kevin was the right choice?
It was just the way that we worked together. I felt like it was a combination of he obviously like really knows what he's doing, but he also is like, he doesn't try to over control anything. Like my voice was still like, very my voice was very important to him, clearly. And so he's like a really good listener, and he will give his input. But he also, I mean, he's a collaborator. So he, it's like we just, I think we made each other better on, especially on Primrose Was in Season. I just think that like we kind of pushed each other in certain ways, but also like really supported each other in certain ways. And I just think that that to me is like the best form of collaboration. So yeah, it was, and also just it was a vibe. It's just like this is a vibe that I like.
Yeah.
So.
Now, are you good at taking a note? Like, are you pretty good at sort of criticism is the wrong word. But the right word would be, hey, this is an idea. How about this? Are you pretty open to it? It sounds like you are.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I especially if I have like the my people, Kevin being one of those people that I love to work with, that to me is like I love that because it's like, what are you hearing? What are you maybe hearing that I'm not hearing? And then like let me hear the idea. And then if I like it, great. And if not, then okay, you know, we can try something else. But yeah, I mean, like, otherwise I would just produce everything just solely myself, you know, if I didn't want any, you know, feedback. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, like, that's, to me, that's the whole beauty of working with other people.
Did you also, do you know Rachel Yamagata and Sandy Bell? Do you know those characters?
Yeah, yes. I don't know them personally, but I just kind of, I mean, I'm a fan of their music and kind of know them on the scene, you know, up here.
Yeah, they're in that camp.
Yes. Yeah.
They're wonderful. Exactly. They're just wonderful. You know, it's interesting because now college for you was where?
Vanderbilt University in Nashville.
Okay. And your thought was, what kind of major were you?
I was a music composition and theory major. They have a music school there called the Blair School of Music. So I majored in music.
So the career path was always music. This is where you were headed.
Yes. I'm smiling because I did have a moment where I also did a lot of theater in high school and college. And so in the city, in New York City, I was also pursuing acting for a while. And I had, like, you know, a couple lines on Law and Order SVU, did some commercials, things like that. And for a while, I was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. Because I genuinely do love that as well. But, you know, it was like one of those industries where everybody comes up to you and says, if there's anything else you want to do, do that instead, because this is really hard. And if there's anything else you want to do. And, you know, the more I heard that just kind of in the industry, the more, like, in the back of my head, I just kind of heard this voice that said music, 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 music. And then, of course, people say the same thing about the music industry. Like, if there's anything else you want to do. But there was no voice that came in my head. People said that about music. I was like, no, I think this is my thing. This is my ultimate passion and love. So yes, I did go to school for music. And music and theater have always been like my two big loves of mine. But music, I think, is my ultimate love.
Write down that clever thing I said in the car on our way to see the stars. Told me we might spy the northern lights that night, but our chances, they were small. And they're just an illusion, like the theory that things come easy. For me, you call me effortless, I call you. Odds haven't been in my favor, all the dice call snake eyes, but it succeeds on both sides. Like the walls of Babylon, this was meant to crumble and fall down. Constellation in the sky.
Is there a part of you that wouldn't mind being back on the stage as an actress or behind the, you know, being on a television show? Is that still something that you kind of go, I'm still keeping it on the back burner somewhere?
Yeah. You know, for a while I had kind of like that wasn't the case for a while. I wasn't really drawn to it. But more recently, I don't know what it is. More recently, in the past couple of years, it's kind of resurfaced in my head, and you know, but that could be really cool to do again. But then, I don't even know really where to begin at this point. You know, I mean, I know I could figure it out if it's something I really wanted to pursue again. But yeah, I have thought about it. I mean, theater's. So I mean, music's so magical, and theater to me is so magical too. Like the collaboration in theater to me is just so special. And I also would love to maybe at some point, I don't know, maybe like write music. A few years ago at this point, it was probably over a decade ago, I wrote incidental music for some plays in New York, and I loved that. And so I could see myself maybe doing that again sometime, because I do love the world of theater. I really do.
Which brings me to my next question, because I was wondering how we were talking about sort of the privacy of the creative process and then bringing it to the public, where you're singing on stage things that are very intimate and vulnerable and personal. In addition to that, you're also being stared at, right? It's like, if you think about it, it's just so invasive from top to bottom. But there you are. And I think that it can make people feel very uncomfortable. But having a theater background, I wonder if sort of the gaze, the human gaze, is not something that throws you off.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's interesting. I've never really thought about it like that before. But now that you say that, I do think that maybe having the theater background has helped with that, because I don't really mind. I don't know, there's something to me, even though the songs that I sing are so personal and just come from such a, you know, honest place of things in my own life, at the same time, I am still on stage performing. And so I think there's something about that kind of gives me a little bit of, I don't know if I want to say separation, but it's like, I mean, to me, the most nerve-wracking gigs are the ones where it's like so intimate, you know, no stage, no lights, nothing, because it feels, you know, it's like there's nothing to hide behind or anything. I almost feel like the bigger the venue, you know, like the less nervous I am, in a way. But yeah, so I do think that maybe the theater background has been good for that. Maybe it's good for stage fright too.
And what about in terms of interstitial chatter? Like, do you talk between songs, and do you think about that? Is it different every night? Do you not know what you're going to say? And does that sort of, because that does freak people out who don't have a theater background. It's sort of like, what do I say between songs? And some people opt to say nothing. I always think of like Evan Dando from the Lemonheads, literally says nothing. He just plays the songs and leaves. At least he did when I saw him. Dylan does that too. And then there's other people who are quite chatty. Do you think about that in terms of your persona up there? And is that something that you give a lot of thought to?
I do. I didn't used to give a lot of thought to it. I feel like I used to just kind of really wing it. And then I realized that it's something that I actually did want to give consideration to, and that it was going to make me feel better and less nervous to kind of have a little bit more of a plan of if I wanted to talk, and if so, like what I wanted to talk about. So now I do prepare a little bit. I don't, you know, I still kind of like to feel things out, go with the flow. But I also at the same time like to have like a few little talking points. I like to maybe sometimes talk about like a couple different songs, give little intros or little like fun backstories about them. But I don't talk between, you know, every song. I kind of like to have a flow where some songs I'm kind of playing them right into one another. And then I'll kind of maybe say a little something, and then just kind of create a flow of the set. And it is always different. I never say the exact same thing in different shows.
I was thinking about how this album is so, I bring this up sometimes to people, and I imagine young people don't know what I'm talking about, but you'll totally get it, because the you made this album and it's sequenced in a way where it tells a story, and the story is as much a feeling as it is a narrative, which is a long way of saying it sequenced perfectly. And
oh, thank you.
I just love it. And I mean, like the album closer is just, I mean, forget about it. It's, I mean, it really is it's a killer.
Thank you.
Was the sequencing difficult for you, or did the songs present themselves in a way where it was like, oh, this feels like almost novelistic is a term I would use to sort of say like how the story is being told?
I think it was more the latter. I think that it, I knew I wanted to start with A Cautionary Tale, and I knew I wanted to end with Whatever It Takes. And I felt like it actually started falling into place pretty easily. And like you said, to me, it was more of a sonic journey that I was interested in, although I do think it also does, you know, the narrative is there too. But no, the sequencing actually came together pretty organically for this one. And I do, it is important to me. I know people are going to, you know, listen to this album in all different ways, or just listen to a single, or listen to it on shuffle, or it's going to be in a playlist, and like, that's all fine. But I do think that there's something really special about records where you just, you know, play it front to back. And I mean, that's why I love vinyl too,
right.
Is, you know, I think, you know, yeah, cause it was created to be listened in this way, ideally. So I do love piecing albums together like that.
For Whatever It Takes, tell me why that presented itself as the obvious close. I have my own theories, but
okay,
what do I know? But why for you was that sort of like the guaranteed album closer?
Well, Whatever It Takes was actually, funnily enough, A Cautionary Tale was the first song I wrote for the record. Whatever It Takes was the last song I wrote for the record, and
wow.
It was missing. I felt like Kevin and I both felt like the album was missing that song. It was missing something that was hopeful and kind of driving in a different way than some of the other songs were. And we wanted to end it, I guess, on a high note, in an authentic way, you know, not just like put a smiley face at the end of something for the sake of it, but more because I think it was reflective of the journey of this album and my journey and getting to this, you know, place of joy. And so I wrote many different versions of Whatever It Takes. I wrote this guitar version that I still really like, but it's like way more moody and kind of like, you know, downcast. And Kevin was like, I love this, but I don't think it's what we're going for the closer. I was like, I agree with you. So I rewrote it again. And I was like, I think this is it. He was like, this is it. Let's track it. Let's do it. So that's how it became the closer on the album.
The other version is too downbeat.
It was just really, I keep coming back to the word moody. It was really moody. It was like more minor key. Not that like minor and moody always have to like go together. But it was, the lyrics were slightly different. And I still want to record a version of it because I still do like it. And I think it would be kind of cool to create like an alt, you know, record an alt version. And it was just, it wasn't kind of, to me, the version now is like, has kind of a celebratory feel to it in a way, I don't know if you want to say victorious or triumphant, or it just has a vibe that I think works really well at the end of the record. And this other guitar version did not have those vibes. It had its own vibe, which was cool, but not what I was looking for kind of the missing piece on the record.
So it sounds like for Primrose, nothing was left on the floor. Like, you had the song cycle. There was no like, should we include this song? It was sort of like, it was all the songs had emerged as this piece, which is kind of rare, I would imagine, for it to be that tight.
Yes. There's one song that actually is, you can find it on Bandcamp. It's a bonus track on Bandcamp at the end. It's called Crying in Slow Motion. It is just piano and vocal. It is, I love it, but it's, to me, it was not, I didn't really love it as much in the context of the record as a whole. I think it's really cool as a bonus track at the end of the record, on Bandcamp. I really like it, like you know, in that context. But it also just is, it's really sad. It's a really sad song, and that's okay. You know, I have nothing against really sad songs, but for this album, I felt like there was plenty of that woven in, and I didn't really want to make like a, you know, quote unquote sad album. I wanted to make something that was, had way, you know, a lot more layers and colors and feelings and emotions. So that's the only one that didn't end up on the record. But I do think, you know, I'll probably release it, separately, you know, maybe on streaming, in addition to it being found on Bandcamp, because I do like it, but that's the only one.
Yeah. I like what you said about that, about a sad record, because I love Nick Drake, but I can't listen to Nick Drake that much anymore. It's like, I mean, not anymore, but there's, as I'm getting older, it's like, I don't want to feel sad all the time. You know, when I was younger and probably in high school and I wanted to be the tragic poet guy, you know, it was cool to walk around saying you're listening to Nick Drake, but at 53, it's sort of like, you know, if I'm driving down the freeway, I'm not blasting Nick Drake because it's too, it just feels too burdensome to me right now. And I love what you said about the idea that there's so many colors in this album, because there is incredible, there, of course, there's heaviness. Of course, there's these wrenching moments. There's also just tremendous beauty and tremendous resolve, which I just picked. I love that so much about this album. And I think that that's, it's a much richer experience because of that.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot that you hear all that, because that's definitely, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to make and what I think we ended up doing. And for a while, at the very beginning, you know, when I brought these songs into Kevin, I was like, this is going to be a really sad album, and that's just going to be what it is. Right. And I was like, I'm ready to embrace it, you know? And, but yeah, we kind of went on this journey, and I think that myself and I think the album are better off for it.
I always imagine that the creative assembly line has to exist somewhere. So you think of a song, you start piecing something together, an idea germinates, you follow it, you pull the thread a little bit, you go, oh, something's happening here, and you construct something. At what point do you say to your husband, hey, I want to play something for you? Like, is he the first guy who gets to hear? And at what point do you bring it to him?
Yeah. Oh God, that's such an interesting question. The first people to hear stuff that I write are, yeah, my husband, Derby, my parents, and Kevin, and my sister. I think my sister. And you know, it's just like usually a gut feeling of kind of like, it usually what happens is I will record while I'm writing into voice memos. And then there will get to a point where I will record a voice memo, and I'll think, maybe this is the finished version. And then I will want to listen to that memo back a lot. And I'll kind of get the song stuck in my head, and I'll want to just kind of keep going back and listening to that. And that to me is the sign that, okay, like, I want to share this. Like, this is feeling good. So that's usually, it's just kind of a gut feeling, I guess.
You've got a good starting lineup of people to listen to your stuff.
I do. Yeah, solid group.
Were your parents musicians?
No. My mom is a singer, and my sister also is a singer. And I mean, they both have beautiful voices. And my mom sang in the church choir growing up, as did my sister and I. And my dad is kind of similar to my husband, like just a music lover, has a great ear. He can't play an instrument. He's learning the guitar.
Oh.
And he wants to learn the piano, which I think, and he just started recently, which I think is so cool. But he has great taste in music, a great ear. And so I grew up in a house with a lot of music in it, a lot of music being played. And we had a piano in my house growing up, which I feel very fortunate that was the case. I was drawn to it very young. But neither of my parents are musicians in like a, not a professional sense, but both music lovers. And my mom is a great singer.
And supportive of your scholastic, like in terms of pursuing music at university, I imagine fully on board with that goal.
Yes, they were. I feel again like very fortunate. They've always been really incredibly supportive and enthusiastic, and always have been and still are. And they're I feel so badly they can't. I've just booked a release show at Mercury Lounge end of April, and they can't go because they're going to be at a wedding and a family wedding. And they're both like so bummed to miss it, and I'm so bummed that they're gonna miss it. But it was like the only date that kind of worked for everybody. But they still, they still will get on a plane and come to shows, and yeah, it's really awesome.
How are you feeling about the Mercury Lounge gig?
I'm excited. I've never played Mercury Lounge before. I usually play, well, now stages 2 and 3 are no more, but Rockwood Music Hall has been my musical home in the city for a while. And then I've done all sorts of different kinds of shows there, but in the past few years, I really was doing much more, solo, listening room kind of shows, which I love. I love doing those kinds of shows. But this show, and for this record, it's going to be different. It's going to be a full band. It's going to be a party. It's going to be, a celebratory and fun. And I'm just so excited about it.
Yeah, that's a good gig. How is your no muscle in terms of, because I have found as I've gotten older, it's gotten much better. I think when I was younger, I couldn't say no to anybody or anything. But being a parent, if someone offered you a tour of, like, say Rachel is going to go out and say, hey, you know Kevin and we know each other, come on out with me for a 20 date tour across the country. Is that really feasible, or would that worry? Because you wouldn't want to be away from your daughter. Is that something that's practical? What does that look like now?
Great question. I do think I'm kind of taking things on like case by case basis. Like with a tour, it would depend on a lot of things. It would depend on, yeah, the length of time, who it was. If it's something that I was really, really pumped about and I felt like this is what I really want to do, then I would make it work. And I don't know exactly how, but I know I would. And because my husband and I have talked about it, and of like if this kind of these kind of opportunities come up, we're gonna like figure it out. I feel really lucky to have a really great partner, and we have a really great daycare up here that she's in, which has made things really great for me in terms of doing any kind of work, and releasing this record. And I feel like we have good support system. So I don't know exactly how I would do it, but I would figure it out. But like you said, like with no with you know there's some things though that I think kind of makes it easier now, actually having had her. It kind of just like puts some things into focus. It kind of streamlines some things, and it's like, oh, this I don't really, it's not worth it, or I don't want to have to juggle all the things to figure it out. I don't really want to do it. No. This thing, yes, this is worth it. I want to figure it out, and like, let's make it happen. Like, I just think it kind of like makes things a little more clear.
It's easier to pick your spots,
Yeah,
right?
totally. Totally. Yeah. Because there is a lot more juggling and work that goes into it. So it kind of is like, well, like, do I want to go through that or do I not? And like, that kind of makes it easier to make decisions.
Yeah, I imagine there is no gray area anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, even with this release show at Mercury Lounge, it's not even a tour, but I knew it was gonna, I was like, this is gonna take a lot. It's gonna take me going into the city. It's gonna take rehearsals. It's gonna take, a lot of planning and a lot of things, where we're gonna have to juggle stuff. And, but as I just knew in my gut, I was like, I wanna do this. This is important to me. And, we're making it work. And, it's just, it's like a, it's a, It's like somebody said to me, it's like there's just more wrinkles kind of to iron out. And
Yeah.
and but that's okay. Like it's kind of awesome. It's kind of awesome to kind of have it all going on and to be able to in a position where I can even have the choice to be doing these kinds of things. I'm just really happy.
people forget that your album wasn't finished yesterday, you know, like, so you probably put it to bed a little while ago. And so I imagine new material has probably emerged. I'm wondering, is there a new song cycle that is kind of revealing itself to you? Have you been hard at work on stuff?
You know, it's interesting. I have some ideas. There are some things that have surfaced and songs I've written, but it's not actually like super clear to me in this moment of time, like what the next thing's going to look like. What's going to be the vibe? It hasn't really presented itself to me in that way yet. I feel actually very steeped still in Primrose Was in Season, even though, as you said, like I finished that record a little while ago. But I'm still like feel very immersed in its world. And I feel like this always happens with albums where eventually there's a moment where I kind of do start writing like a lot more and I kind of feel like, you know, then I like let the older one go and it kind of just feels like this organic transition. And I feel like I haven't quite had that full transition yet out of this album, which is okay with me, you know, just kind of like letting it happen as it happens. But one idea I have had and I've written for this project over the years is I do at some point want to do something that is really heavily steeped in Irish traditional music, with the kind of putting my own spin on traditionals, but also I've written my own, you know, songs that would go on that same project. And so that's something that I've been kind of thinking about. It's been ruminating. And it's something where like, if I kind of feel stuck or I want to like sit down on the piano, but I'm not, you know, nothing's really coming to me, I will always kind of go back to some of those traditionals and kind of like reharmonize them and play them. And, you know, kind of, they will spark some creativity. And so, yeah, we'll see. That's been something I've been thinking about.
Yeah, being an artist is an interesting thing because I'm a writer and it's sort of like, if I finish something, my next thought is, okay, what's next? Like, there's never this moment of like, you know, where you sort of take a beat, right? It's all one big process. And even though you can segment it out and say, this is the Primrose album and this is this album, it is part of all one big longer creative narrative. And so things are always percolating and bubbling and coming to light.
Totally. Yes, they are. I mean, I don't know. I can also, you know, see myself doing like something totally different. I mean, Kevin and I talked about like making a record of two of us that's like under a different moniker and like something just kind of wild and fun and rock and roll. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe like I'll take, you know, maybe we'll do that, you know, this year. Like maybe we'll just kind of, I don't know, just kind of like see what feels good. I feel like this album felt so good to make. And I feel like as long as I'm kind of keep trying things new, and doing what, you know, feels fun and creative and kind of pushing myself in new directions, then like, you know, and it's all good.
This is a very uncertain world. But one thing I am certain of is that you made a absolutely beautiful album. And, you know, it's also something I thought about where, you know, your daughter, this is like a legacy, right? It's like your daughter will be listening to this album, which I imagine makes the creative process angled in a totally different way, but it's also like super cool.
It is super cool. I just feel like, I know there's going to be a point where I, you know, she's heard the music, you know, she's heard the music and it's actually been so fun. Cause she's even kind of like, you know, like I play, you know, Nest and she'll like bop to it. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like May really likes Nest. Like, that's so cool. And like, that's so, you know, that's amazing. But you know, yeah, later on, she'll know the story of the record and I'll tell her more about it. And it really is. I mean, yeah, it's just the truth is that this album helped me get to her. And, you know, in that way, I mean, that way they'll always be kind of connected. And I just think that's really, really special. And so in some ways, it's sort of like, I don't even know where to go from there in terms of what I make next. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, I don't know. but whatever it is, you know, I'm sure I know that my, you know, experience now a motherhood and everything that goes along with, you know, my life, my kind of new chapter of my life up here will inform it. And I'm excited about whatever that ends up being.
Well, I think you're marvelous. I think you made a beautiful, beautiful album, and congratulations on that. And and I can't wait to hear more of your stuff. I'd love the idea of you and Kevin making a Shaggy rock and roll record. That sounds
right? Yeah. I know. I think we have to do it. I think it's just too much fun.
Tell that guy, he's been threatening to come on my podcast for years. Tell him I'm still after him.
Oh, I will. Oh, okay. I definitely will. Yes.
I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate your music, and I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate your tech support husband. Tell him thank you for saving the day.
I'll pass that along. Yeah. I'll give him a really good tip.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. This was lovely speaking with you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, Mackenzie was having trouble with her mic, and her husband came in and saved the day. So thanks to that guy. I need tech support for all the squirrels in the yard. Right behind the studio, we've got about 6 squirrels running up and down the tree. It's very cute. Right as I'm recording the ending of the podcast, the squirrels are like, hey, we want to be involved. We have things to say. Maybe we're making an album. Maybe you want to interview us. And I'm like, no, I'll just keep feeding you walnuts. I thought that was the arrangement. Anyway, if you hear squirrels in the background, just know they're as cute as they sound. Mackenzie Shivers, a lovely person, a lovely album. Primrose was in season. Go get it. MackenzieShivers.com. MackenzieE, Shivers.com. Shop around on her site. She has really cool stuff. Very cool merch. Beautiful versions of her music. And she has a really nice tote bag. There's also a flask, a rejection letter flask, which is, I believe, sold out. But keep checking back. You never know. AlexGreenBooks.com is where you need to go to find out what's happening with me. I don't have any flasks on my site, but I do have squirrels in the yard here. So, you know, everything balances out. BombshellRadio.com is where you got to go to find out what's happening with our radio station. We are on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can follow me on Twitter or X or Twitter X or X Twitter, at Embers Editor, or on Instagram at Embers Podcast, or just email me, editor@StereoEmbersMagazine.com. Stereo Embers, the podcast, is available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to this show on now. Rate and review the podcast if you have time to do so. Please tell all your friends, spread the word. We would really appreciate it. Let's close the show. There goes more squirrels. How is that possible? How many are out there? It's like squirrel recess. Let's close the show with a longer listen to the squirrels in the backyard and Mackenzie Shivers' new song, Johnny Gown. Enjoy it. And thank you, as always, for listening to Stereo Embers, the podcast, only right here on Bombshell Radio.
I held my breath for you until you said you were through. We spoke of death as if he was somebody that we knew. I flung my words round the kitchen, but nothing stuck like glue. Everybody thinks I'm doing well. Can't tell, I'm barely respiring. Johnny Gown. in my vibe, and the devil's in the deep.